So you're a young guy. You join NYPD. What was it like entering on duty in New York Police Department? Probably one of the biggest, if not the biggest, police departments in the world. What was your gear like back then? And what was your basic duty kit like?
NYPD gear, they force you to buy in the academy. You have to buy this certain gear, and it's crap. It's the cheapest of the cheap. And in LA, way better gear, just a way better way of equipping its officers. In NYPD, it's very draconian. You have to buy their gear, what they say, from specific dealers. And man, it was, you look at your stereotypical NYPD cop, and if you bought your own gear, it's a totally different mindset. If you bought your own gear that was more high speed, you were called what's called a buff. And being a buff wasn't a good thing. That meant you were into the job and you were into the policing and you wanted to be a professional. I mean, any other profession, though, you know, be like, oh, yeah, you're buying your own gear. You're investing in yourself. You're into your profession. Good on you. There, it's like you're ostracized. It's a weird thing. What do you mean? You know, you want the best equipment. It's just a bizarre world. NYPD, great, the greatest guys. But it's its own department with its own quirks that I don't know how it originated, but it's just the way it is. So
now I would imagine, like NYPD being as big as they are, big as it is, some precincts may, you know, never see any activity that's really dynamic. Now, when you first hit like a dynamic instance, and what I mean by dynamic is like, wow, it's breaking off. We got to go right now. I might die. What was that like to get that adrenaline surge? And then did you feel like you were prepared?
I definitely was prepared. The people around me weren't necessarily prepared. Like I said, going to training and doing things on your own definitely wasn't promoted. It was looked down upon. So when you're encountering, you know, kinetic environments and radio calls or entering non-permissive type of scenarios, you really can't rely on a lot of the guys behind you because their training is very baseline, if anything at all. And the way NYPD kind of solves things is just mass, just throwing numbers at it. So say we have someone that's on the run in a building, you're going to get huge amounts of assets, and they may not necessarily do things by the book, but it gets done. You know, it's its own little quirks. But just for instance, one time we were clearing, we had a guy in a building, possible burglary suspect, and we all converge. And the superintendent of the building, what they call the super in New York City, department manager, everywhere else, says, "Hey, I think this guy's in this ladder that leads up to a garage. I mean, leads up to the roof." So normally, you know, you take that guy, put him on the side. Hey, go back to, you know, shelter in place or whatever. The sergeant, that was in charge of the scene, which great guy, but he just did things the NYPD way. He lets the super go up the ladder. Like say, here's the door, and he opens it up and the guy's like, "Hey, he's up there." And he's like, "Oh yeah, where?" He's like, he's pointing. So the guy just naturally wants to help and he's going up the ladder. And while this guy's going up the ladder, the sergeant has his gun pointed up with a cigarette and like a flashlight all tucked in. So he's backlighting him. He's got a cigarette. He's got the gun. And I'm just standing there. I'm like, "Hey, Sarge, you want me to handle it?" No, yeah, he's good. He's good. So I'm like, "Oh, shit. If this guy is actually up there and falls or something," you know, Sarge is clacking off around and the poor soup is catching one in the back. So luckily there was no one there, but it's hilarious to see the sergeant up there looking. And he's like, "Hey, what do you see up there, Poppy?" He's like, "Oh, I don't know. I don't see him up here. All right. Come on down."
So, can you imagine guys, nowadays?
I mean, that's for the grace of God. Yeah.
You know, that's the thing is like policing has changed over the past few decades. You're still in a policing. You're still out there on the street and you're now in Los Angeles. Los Angeles has seen a huge shift in police support and, you know, whether it be the defund the police aspect, it be this, be that. And a lot of times when it comes down to defund the police and a lot of these other aspects, funding goes away for gear, funding goes away for training, and a lot of times you on the street are the first to respond to a dynamic issue. a lot of times in the news and everything, you'll see a call out and you'll see the SWAT team show up. They're all geared. They're all tactical. They're all buff, as you would say in New York, with all the latest and greatest. What is it like for you to be rolling around, and correct me if I'm wrong, you're in plain clothes now, right? Rolling around in plain clothes with all your gear, and how do you get ready for the day?
How I get ready for the day, actually get ready for the day by getting ready the day before. So before I go and a watch, I do, a whole inventory check of my gear, make sure everything's clean, free of debris, batteries are charged, extra batteries, and just go through like an A to Z on my equipment check. So if the next day I don't have time to recheck all that stuff and we just got to hit the ground running, I already know my stuff's good to go. I'll still look around and make sure everything's good to go. And in case I miss something, which normally, I can, and I could recheck everything and I'm good to go. But if we get a call in the middle of the night, hey, we got to start early or whatever, I could just jump in and I know my stuff is ready. So, stay ready so you don't have to get ready type of mentality. That's the way I was taught.
Now, are you still out there, buying your own gear and getting your own gear and, buying what's right for you?
Absolutely. I mean, it's my career, is the way I teach my guys and my rookies and trainees throughout the years. It's like, just know that the police department is going to give you the bare minimum, no matter where you are. And you have to invest in yourself. You have to take extreme ownership in your career and your safety. And if you're satisfied with the gear they give you, great. Awesome. Sometimes we get some good stuff. Sometimes we don't. But if you don't, always look for the better gear, something that's tailored to you. And of course, everything's not a one size fits all. So yes, invest in yourself. Find out, don't get comfortable. There's always something better that's out there. So be curious, look at what other people have, and then go for it. Always constantly evaluate yourself and your gear and everyone else. And don't get complacent in any aspect of your career.
Complacency kills. We heard that a lot. It's cliche in some sectors, but for the audience out there, complacency in law enforcement, these are people who are strapping up every day, not knowing if they're coming home at night. You've heard that a million times, but the reality is they're not. There have been so many officer involved shootings and so many assaults. And one thing about this new show, Everyday Protectors, is, I partnered up with Hardhead Veterans. We protect our core, our level 3 vests, 3As, we're putting on to protect our core, our vitals, the noggin, this big old head. And you and I have some big heads. Yes. If you don't have ballistic protection for your head, that is an issue. A lot of times we see the SWAT teams, the call-outs, the pre-planned operations, the warrants, all geared up, tack plates in, ballistic helmets, they're ready to go. You're on a street. If something breaks off, what would it be like to have a ballistic helmet available? Would you use it?
You know what? The younger version of me, I don't need it. Or, just go with a soft cover or something, less intrusive. But through the years, I've seen mistakes and sacrificing convenience over true safety. Yeah, I definitely want to have all my gear next to me. So, the helmet is within distance of me. All my gear, I should be able to be able to grab it without looking. I could always know. That's where I want to be consistent with all my gear, flashlight, tack vest, and everything else. I could close my eyes and I know where everything is, like a clock. And be able to grab it if my right hand's injured, be able to grab it with the left. So I'm always thinking about placement. And yeah, I definitely suggest, having access and, everything's here. You could replace, you can go without one arm, you can go without a leg. You can't go without a head. I haven't seen anyone that can, so.
Well, the other dynamic too is it's not just day-to-day operations as far as let's say you're on a warrant squad, you're on a fugitive squad, you're on a surveillance squad. Now you have to deal with active shooter response. And a lot of times active shooters may have something a little bit more than just a handgun. So when you're showing up, it'd be great to have some sort of ballistic protection for your noggin. Granted, your vest isn't going to stop a 5.56, a 7.62, unless you have a sappy plate in or attack plate. But the noggin, that noggin, it seems like just, I can't imagine going to an environment head first.
Right. I mean, and then you're not even thinking, you know, ballistic. You know, you could be thinking ballistic, and then you're in the projects or whatever, and you're taking bottles and rocks, and you know, you whatever happened, whatever we're planning for, in one scenario, Murphy's Law is going to be something else, and so that something else might be a rock to the head, a bottle to the head, and every scene that we go to now has the possibility of leading to that direction very quickly. So it has multi uses. And if you go hands on with somebody, I mean, grabbing somebody up and then you're rocking them with a headbutt with a helmet, they're going to feel that. So it's multi-purpose.
Well, Nako, I appreciate you coming on and just giving us a really brief overview of kind of the importance of having the right gear, kind of what's going on out in the street, and exactly what's been changed over the past decades, especially with your old sergeant with the cigarette and flashlight in his hands. There is so much more we could do for the everyday protector. It's not just law enforcement. It's everybody that's in this line of protection. And now it's also coming down to protect this house. Everybody is their own protector.
So your own first responder.
We are. Absolutely. Absolutely. And that is protect this house, brother. Thank you for all that you do. And thank you for being a protector, brother.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you for having me on. Let me spiel, talk my business. Much appreciated, brother. Keep on doing the great work you're doing.
You too, brother. Keep safe out there.
You got it.